Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Hello and welcome to the latest Forza Italian Football Podcast. As ever, I'm your host, Connor Clancy, and joining me this week is just one person, but the ever reliable and more than adequate Vito Doria. Vito, welcome along.
Thanks, Connor. Great to speak with you again. Another time that we'll be chatting just the two of us. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to more cultural discussion.
Yeah, it might be just the two of us, Vito, but the listeners don't need to worry because it is, let's be honest, it's the best two of us. So we'll more than make up for the absence of those who shall not be named. But I suppose let's just crack straight on with this then. It's probably going to be a short one, listeners, so sorry about that, but we just have to get through this. Fiorentina-Inter is probably the place to start, then looking at the fixtures. It was a big game. Vito, do you think this is Inter slipping up again, or is it a respectable result against a decent enough team?
To be honest, I think it's a case of Inter slipping up again. After the game, Luciano Spalletti said that there were issues with the depth of the team, especially with the defence. So, you know, with Ranocchia having to play instead of Miranda, and then he had an injury, so that was not convenient. So I reckon they need to really top up. The defence is the obvious one because you need those extra reserves. And also, I've been lamenting for a while that Inter really do need a trequartista, because if Inter have a trequartista, I think they'll be much better going forward. They'll have better service. And I reckon Inter were lucky because Fiorentina had several chances to win the game. Federico Chiesa has been one of the most promising youngsters in Italian football for the last year or so. And if his finishing was better, I reckon he could have scored maybe three or four goals against the Nerazzurri. Even Kuma Babacan, when he came on, he probably could have scored a goal or two, because there was one attempt that he did with a bicycle kick, and if he scored that, that would have been a superb goal. But I guess they had to wait till the end for Simeone to get an equaliser. And once again, between bad finishing from Fiorentina and also Handanovic being a fine goalkeeper, Inter can be glad to get the point, but also they need to address the depth issues and also the problems with their performances.
Yeah, absolutely. It's for so many seasons we've been saying and thinking just how fortunate Inter are to have Samir Handanovic in goal, because they'd probably be a lot worse off without him. And that looked like you could have taken this game from any other of the most recent disappointing Inter seasons, because as you say, Fiorentina were unlucky not to win that. Chiesa probably should have scored. Giovanni Simeone, though, I really, really like him. He took his goal brilliantly. He just absolutely smashed it in at the near post. No nonsense. What do you make of him? I'm a big fan of his. You obviously didn't like him too much last season when he was at Genoa, but he's kind of stepping up with Fiorentina this year, isn't he?
He definitely is, and I'm a believer of his talent as well. Just a shame he was at the Cugini last season, but he's seen the light. He's with the Viola, and I reckon he's another one of those Argentinian strikers that can really keep progressing. If he gets high numbers, I would not rule him out of the Argentinian squad in the near future, even if he doesn't make the World Cup squad. Maybe in the future years at another World Cup, I'm sure someone with his attributes will make the Argentinian squad. And at least with Argentina, with the abundance of forwards they have, with the right coach, and they've got Jorge Sampaoli at the moment, I'm sure he can find a way to accommodate Simeone and other strikers.
Yeah, well, that's the thing. He's kind of unfortunate to be Argentine, isn't he? Because they've got Mauro Icardi, Paulo Dybala, a slightly different type of player. Gonzalo Higuain can't really get in the squad all the time. Icardi's obviously been left out loads. They've got a lot of talent in those attacking positions, but you would hope if Simeone can keep improving as he has done, and there's no reason to suggest why he can't, that he could get into that Argentina squad. But we've a few comments coming in. Hamza says he will be the third member of the podcast. Hamza, welcome along. It's good to have you here. And Jax, I haven't heard from you for a while. It's good to have you back in the comments. But maybe this is why he hasn't been along. He says, I haven't tasted an Inter victory in so long. Do you know what? I actually can't remember the last time Inter won. Vito, you might be able to remind me, but it has been a pretty long time that the inferior Nerazzurri have been left waiting for a win. But yeah, what was it Spalletti said after the game, that his mum, who is 80 years old, could even see that Inter needed a defender? But for me, that was a bit concerning, because I know the defence isn't that strong, but Spalletti's kind of done a bit of a good job organising them, and they haven't looked incompetent at any point throughout the season, despite having Ranocchia, Danilo D'Ambrosio and Yuta Nagatomo in it at times. And I'm with you. They desperately need someone to play behind Icardi and to feed him chances, because Perisic can't do it on his own all season. Would you be concerned if you were an Inter fan that Spalletti seems to be prioritising bringing in more defensive reinforcements?
I would be very concerned. Even as a neutral, I'm concerned that Inter aren't doing enough of a job to get an attacking midfielder. There apparently are problems in trying to get Javier Pastore from Paris Saint-Germain, so that's not a good sign at all. And I've seen rumours linking them with Gerard de la Feu from Barcelona, and he's more of a winger than a trequartista, so either Spalletti needs to give Orsillo a bigger push to get an attacking midfielder, or if they somehow manage to get de la Feu, they probably need to change the formation, because I can't really see De La Feu being a trequartista in a 4-2-3-1. To me, he's a winger, and with the players Inter has got, they're probably better off with a 4-3-3 formation.
Yeah, you've kind of hit the nail on the head with exactly my thoughts. Hamza's still commenting, and he's trying to be my friend. And don't worry, Hamza, we will come to all of the points that you're raising. Don't you worry. But no, I completely agree. The only thing I could think would the idea be to have Perisic out on the left, De La Feu on the right, and then maybe allow Borja Valero to play in that 10 position. But that's not where he's at his best, really. He's better at creating things from deep. So yeah, Inter work better in a 4-3-3 for me. I don't really understand the plans, if the plans actually are to bring in De La Feu. I think the main benefit they'd get from that would be it would piss off Milan a little bit. But other than that, I don't think that's what they need at all. Fiorentina then, Pioli's doing quite a good job. I was pretty scathing of them in the summer because they decided to change their whole squad, really. But he has them sitting kind of comfortably in and around mid-table. They're still within a chance of getting the European places, obviously. They've got, 29 points now. They're in ninth. And then Samper in sixth on 30 points. So it's not out of the question for them to push on and get the Europa League. Fiorentina fans should be happy enough with things, yeah?
I would think so, because on paper it seemed that Fiorentina were really going to have a major decline, and I had a feeling that they might have been between mid-table and maybe even just outside the relegation spots, because it was just such a big overhaul of the squad and they sold a few players too, so that was a bit concerning. But under the circumstances, Pioli's done a very good job, and be interesting to see how the second half of the season goes for them, because I reckon that they can be a challenger for the Europa League spots, and that's only because the teams around them are inconsistent and Samp are starting to slip up as well.
Yeah, Samp are slipping up, and we are going to touch on that later, Vito, I'm afraid. Sorry, but we couldn't not bring that up at some point. But yeah, Fiorentina doing okay, ticking along. And I do think it's only fair that we give them a bit of praise there, because last season we absolutely slaughtered them for a lot of the season because they were underperforming and just not really offering anything. But credit where it's due, they're performing above expectations this year. So we'll look at them again in a couple of weeks after the winter break is finished. Napoli-Verona then. Napoli won 2-0, staying top, even though it wasn't the prettiest of wins. They dominated, but they didn't find a breakthrough until relatively late on and went on to win comfortably. Is that almost an even more enjoyable win for Napoli and Sarri than if they had to put six past Verona and not really learned anything?
Well, again, it shows that they can score goals when they need to, and also even if they don't win convincingly, that they can still get those results. Sometimes you get those games where you just dominate possession, you create all these chances and you don't score, and then the opposition gets one against you. But fortunately for them, Verona is not like Juve or Inter. Those two teams were able to sit back and defend and not let Napoli score anyways. Verona just hasn't got the defensive quality to deal with Napoli's attacks. And although they had to wait for the second half for goals, Napoli can be confident in that their style of play works. They dominated possession. It might have been something like 72 to 28%. So they'll be very happy with that. And I reckon it's good for them to get that confidence that even though teams try to park the bus against them, if they have that ability to break them down, that might be a good sign for the future. So when they have to face another team who will put, you know, 8 to 10 players behind the ball or just sit in the penalty area, they can still find a way.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Yeah, well, one thing, it's January, guys, so forgive us for speculating and talking about transfers that may or may not happen, but they are being quite heavily linked with Simone Verdi of Bologna, who is obviously a fine player, but I'm quite sceptical of this because I don't think he's quite what they need. He's just another option to fit into what they already have, which might seem like it makes sense, obviously, but they've got Adam Unas, who can't get a look in to do that. He's still trying to settle in. So to bring in Verdi, does it really make that much sense? Should they look at, I don't know, getting another type of player in who can give them something different?
Personally, I would look at another centre forward or someone who could play as a false nine. So there's talk of getting Roberto Inglese back from Kiev to play as a traditional centre forward. And there was speculation about a month ago that they could get Domenico Berardi from Sassuolo and he could play on both wings. And I think he's even got the attributes to play as a false nine, because I remember a few times at Sassuolo that there were a few games that Di Francesco used the 3-5-2 formation and he was paired with Simone Zaza, and that was back in the first season in Serie A. So I think he could do the Mertens role pretty well. As for Simone Verdi, he might not be the most essential purchase, but compared to Unas, I think, is too raw, whereas Verdi has more experience, he's a bit more proven, and he's also a dead ball specialist. So I think that's another aspect that Napoli can add. Mertens and Insigne can hit free kicks pretty well, but Verdi in that aspect is a better player. So I reckon that would be very handy to have a player like Verdi in the squad. And I reckon he's got the technique and the smarts to adapt to Sarri's methods.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question on that, that he would fit in there quite nicely. But I don't know, my hesitation with the whole thing is probably just that he's just a less effective version of what they already have in Mertens and Insigne. And I guess there's no problem with having more options like that. But I don't know, I could just see him going there and being loaned straight back to Bologna or someone else for a while anyway.
Mind you, they still have Giaccarini on the books, so... I reckon any excuse to get rid of him, I suppose.
That's a fair point. Hamza has actually said he reckons that Unas should play more for Napoli, which I reckon he's probably got a point, because I do agree with what you said, that he does look raw, but maybe that the only way to get around that is to play him more so he gets this experience. And I get where Sarri's hesitation is, and that if he takes a risk and plays Unas and they don't win, he's going to be slaughtered for it, because Juve are really breathing down their necks at the moment, and they probably will be right until the end of the season if they don't overtake them.
I would say wait for the Europa League.
Yeah, that's a very fair point, actually. I completely forgot they were in that. When they got knocked out of Europe, or of the Champions League, that I kind of just wrote them off. But of course, they're joining the big boys in the Europa League. But Leipzig. We'll move on to Spal 2, Lazio 5. That was a lot of goals, obviously, but and it's not really that surprising, because Lazio will do that. Immobile in particular against the lesser teams, I don't know if I'm being harsh, but he will punish them. Four goals, and I think I heard that I actually did a podcast with the guys from the Final Third podcast, which is a good podcast on European football. You should check it out, guys. And I was told that he's the first player in Europe's top five leagues to reach 20 goals for the season. It's pretty impressive. What do you make of Immobile? Is he a bit of a flat track bully, or has he proved otherwise this year?
As far as I'm concerned, Immobile is a good club level player, and he's done well for Lazio, obviously in Serie A, but even in some of the cup competitions, he's done well. I just think with the Azzurri circumstances that some people would look at Immobile as a scapegoat, but the problems lie a lot deeper. So I think Immobile being a striker not scoring, I think people were just looking for an easy way out. For Lazio, he's under Simone Inzaghi, who's done a great job since he's taken over as the full-time coach. And he's got the balance of the team right, and everyone's in position, so they can build the attack around him. And it's also handy to have someone like Luis Alberto playing behind him, who's also in fantastic form.
Yeah, the Lazio fans can really just sit back and enjoy the season, because it's hard to tell what their expectations would really be. Because last season it was kind of seen that they overperformed in finishing. Where did they finish? They had fifth, sixth. It was seen that they overperformed because there was nothing expected of them because of what happened the previous summer with the Marcelo Bielsa thing and Simone Inzaghi leaving and then coming back because Bielsa left after 2 days. But Inzaghi's proven himself to be a good coach. Is he going to be there for much longer than this season? I suppose that same question could be asked of their big players.
Well, hopefully he does stay with them. And to be honest, I can't really see him moving to a bigger club just yet, because it seems that most of the positions are fixed or the environments are probably not at the most ideal. For instance, I mean, if he went to AC Milan next season, they've chopped and changed so many times with coaches, I don't think it'd be a good environment for him to be there. And Juventus, it depends if they keep Allegri or if he decides to go elsewhere. So I can't see him leaving Lazio just yet, and I would like him to stay with the Biancocelesti because he's making the most of the squad they have, and Claudio Lotito's not a president who likes to spend big, so I reckon Lotito has luck on his side with a coach like Inzaghi mentoring the players.
Yeah, I think Juve is probably where I'd see him going to, and you're dead right. That does depend very much on what happens with Allegri, obviously. Juve, then, they won, but just, it wasn't easy or pretty or anything for them away to Cagliari. Even Max Allegri came out after the game and said that Cagliari didn't deserve to lose. What did you make? There was some VAR controversy here again. I'm not bothered talking about VAR, to be honest with you. Mm. We've done it enough. Everyone out there knows our opinions on that. But Juventus, they often get praised for winning these games. But are they winning too many of these games by these narrow margins this season, do you think?
I think it's a common thing in the Allegri era, to be honest. And with this kind of approach, it goes to show that in Serie A it works, but in Europe it doesn't. And this is where I think the old-school Italian mentality tends to fail in the big games these days. Italy doesn't have the players that they used to have. And when I think of the last two European campaigns, I look at how they lost to Bayern Munich in the round of 16 2 years ago and how they lost the Champions League final last year to Real Madrid. And I reckon it's because of this mentality of winning close games all the time, just doing enough. I think when it matters most and they have to go for the kill, they're not used to it and they buckle under the pressure or they're not used to those experiences. So really, if it was anyone else or team with a different cultural mindset, they should be trying to put Cagliari to the sword, even in Sardinia. So, yeah, again, it's a case of they're grinding out a win, but one day those kind of wins or that sort of approach will hurt you on the backside.
Yeah, should we give some credit to Cagliari then? Because they did play quite well. As Jax, I think it was, has pointed out in the comments that Szczęsny was absolutely fantastic. He probably saved Juve at that point. But yeah, we rarely see these lesser teams going to play against Juventus and properly taking them on, but that's exactly what they did. Pavoletti, I thought, was good. He was unlucky not to have a goal. Should more teams take this approach, or do they just risk being absolutely murdered on the counter-attack?
Well, the way Juve plays, I think they should have a go at them. It's good for Cagliari to really take those shots and, you know, try to create the play against Juve. In a way, Juve does want teams to sit back, but if one team has enough self-belief or confidence, like Samp did in November, then Juve are gettable. I reckon with Cagliari, they were unfortunate that Szczęsny has been in career best form, to be honest. And since deputising for Buffon, I think he's been one of Juve's best players.
Yeah, his kind of rebirth since, was it his second season in Roma that he really came on, has been kind of remarkable for anyone that saw him with Arsenal, because he didn't really see this coming. And now it looks like he could actually be the heir to Buffon at Juve and they won't need to get rid of someone else. But sticking in Turin, Torino sacked Sinisa Mihailovic after their Coppa Italia exit and subsequently went on to beat Bologna 3-0, I believe. Correct me if I'm wrong. Yeah, 3-0. Yeah. Is that a coincidence, new manager bounce, or are all the players just absolutely delighted not to have Sinisa Mihailovic screaming at them anymore?
Apparently, some of the players did go to see him after he was sacked, but I wouldn't be surprised if they're happy to be gone with Mihailovic and not have to deal with his screaming and shouting. All right, Mazzarri is a much better coach than Mihailovic, and also I think it's more than just a honeymoon period. I think Mazzarri is the type of guy that can turn a corner for Torino. He won't be under as much pressure as he was at Inter. So I think Torino might be the right place for him to get his coaching career back on track.
Yeah, do you think that's Mazzarri's level then? Because, as you say, there was a bit too much pressure on him with Inter. And then after a certain point with Napoli, he kind of just seems to lose it or get figured out or something. And it didn't work out for him too well in England, of course. But he's not got too much expectations there. Torino are obviously sitting in mid-table now at the moment. We'll have outside hopes of getting the Europa League. How do you see him getting on there then? Can they really push up and challenge with Atalanta, Fiorentina, Samp and the rest?
With the squad they have, I reckon they can. And it would also help if Belotti can be fit. That would be a big bonus. But even with getting Mazzarri as a coach, he's got a more defined style of play than Mihajlovic. And if Giampiero Ventura can get them into the Europa League and reach the round of 32 or 16 with them, I'm sure Mazzarri can do better than him.
Yeah. We've had another question about Mihajlovic, and you've actually written on this subject, so I'll let you take it away. Do you think that Mihajlovic will hover around back in other Serie A clubs? Obviously, he can't take another club this season, but what do you think? Is he just going to kind of keep moving around, hop on the Serie A merry-go-round, as they say, or is he just not really cut out for it?
I reckon he'll probably go on the merry-go-round, but I don't think he's really cut for Serie A. The way the game is going now, you've got to be more complete and more detailed in your coaching. In Serie A, the tacticians have often been very shrewd, but you do get a few of these so-called motivational coaches that do the rounds. And a coach like Mihajlovic, I think now more than ever, he's really getting found out. And I can't see him getting one of those teams that can qualify for Europe. He'd be more suited to maybe a lower place Serie A club because he just doesn't have that great tactical nous.
No, that's it. Everywhere he goes, he seems to just do, quite well, but nothing too remarkable, really. Another comment, Mihajlovic was loved by the Milan players and with the Torino players. In that aspect, he's a very valuable coach. It's one thing to be liked by your players, but then to actually be able to implement tactics and win matches is a completely different thing. So, I don't know. I think Torino were right to part ways with him. We've discussed it a few times on the podcast, and I just don't think they were really taken on board his ideas. And if they were, they clearly weren't working because the talent and potential in that Torino squad is greater than being the 10th best team in Italy. All right, this is the game I've been waiting for anyway. Roma 1, Atalanta 2. Roma fans, you can be lucky that it was only 2 because it should have been 4 or 5 by halftime. And then Alexander Kolarov took a dive and got Martin De Roon sent off. Vito, I don't know if you got any of this. If you did, what were your thoughts?
Well, that De Roon sending off, I think that was the only reason that Roma were able to get into the game. That first half was a complete domination by Atalanta. The statistics would show that Roma dominates the possession, but the quality of possession just wasn't there. They were just very slow in their ball movement, and it was very unimaginative. Atalanta sat deep, but they were very dangerous on the counter-attack, and they were getting their passes right too. So really, to be honest, they should have been more than 2-0 up. And also, the goals were well worked too. I mean, the first goal by Cornelius was nice through ball that he received, and then he just curled one in, and he showed more mobility than I thought. And then for the second goal by De Roon, a lot of it was great work done by Papu Gomez, just the timing and the way to hold up the ball. It was fantastic play. And although in the second half, Roma got a goal back through Dzeko, they just looked very simplistic and uninspiring, to be honest. And it's the type of games that Roma historically tends to bottle, unfortunately.
All the comments are coming in. And I'm making a lot of friends in the comments today. Hamza's back, says Gasperini's the most underrated manager in Europe and Atalanta are the most underrated team. Completely agree. And he also points out Andrea Masiello's block at the end where he basically just threw his face in the way of the ball. That was brilliant. And Jack said Atalanta were incredible. But when Andrea Masiello came on, I just kind of thought, okay, we'll be all right here because that man does absolutely anything to stop the opposition from winning, obviously since what happened a few years ago when he was at Bari. But since then, the turnaround in that guy's career has been phenomenal. And I said it here last week, but if he didn't go through what he went through and he didn't do what he did then, he would be seriously one of the most respected defenders in Italy, I think, because he's astonishing. But yeah, you touched on the possession stats there, and they're completely distorted because of that unfair red card, because Atalanta smashed them in the first half. They dominated. And you're right to point out Papu Gomez's impact for that first goal, because he fell over when he got to the byline. He's been crowded out by about four players. And he just stops, completely waits, and kind of eyes up the whole situation and sees De Roon coming on and rolls it back for him beautifully. Iličić played a great ball for Cornelius's opener, obviously. And yeah, Roma, Atalanta were just happy to let them have the ball in the second half. And they were just sitting back and they knew that they weren't going to be able to break them down. And to be fair, Roma didn't have too many clear-cut chances. Dzeko had one, I think, before he scored that he missed, if I'm remembering that right. But other than that, between Palomino, Toloi, Caldara and Masiello, Atalanta just defended brilliantly. And then Remo Freuler did a great job protecting them in front. And Cristante, who came on for Iličić at halftime, slotted into that defensive role nicely. But it's not something that's dawned on me recently, but just how versatile they are really has hit me in recent weeks. Because if anything happens to anyone in that team, probably with the exception of Gomez, they've got a ready-made replacement. Like, the back three isn't even a consistent back three, because they've got Palomino who can come in and do a job there. Bastoni is off to Inter now, but he would have been more than capable to come in and do a job. Fullbacks, they've got, who have they got? Gosens to come in when Spinazzola's not there, and they've got Timothy Castagna on the right, who probably should be playing ahead of Hans Hattabor. But for whatever reason, Gasperini insists on playing Hattabor, and to be honest, I don't think I'm in any place to question Gasp, because the job he's done there. Midfield, obviously, De Roon, Freuler, even Malagoni and Cristante, and then Cornelius and Petagna up top can kind of come in and do different jobs. But yeah, I just want to make this an Atalanta Club Focus podcast, to be honest, because I could talk about that game for about an hour and I wouldn't get bored, because it really, really was a brilliant way to cap off a brilliant week. And before we move on from this, we should mention that the Atalanta fans, again, proving that they are probably the best fans in Italy, because after they knocked Napoli out of the Coppa Italia, they all gathered at the airport to welcome the players back when they landed in the early hours of the morning. And then what, 3 or 4 days later, after beating Roma 2-1 at the Stadio Olimpico, they do the exact same thing. And the players seem to really appreciate it as well. It's all over their Instagram stories and stuff. And it's really nice to see. And every time they do it, I go and look at flights to see how long or how cheaply I can get out there. And I just want to go to a game. So I'm considering going to the Napoli game immediately after the winter break, which will be fun. Vito, I'm sorry to bring the tone down, but Sampdoria were beaten by Benevento. Benevento, who hadn't won all season, and now they've won back-to-back Serie A games and are just 8 points off the drop. From a Sampdoria perspective first, what happened here?
It was an absolute disaster on our part. There were games that we've lost and we looked competitive, but to be honest, Benevento were very good in the pressing. They were compact. They defended deep, so they stifled us from trying to play our game. We really lacked fluidity, creativity, and also our defensive game was pretty poor. We were rather open at the back, vulnerable to counterattacks. And when Jacopo Sala got sent off with 7 minutes to go, that really just opened up the gates for Benevento to get their second consecutive win.
Yeah, and I was going to say it got a bit cagey at the end, but it didn't, because the game was over really before Samp got that consolation goal. But if we're going to talk about Benevento, the Witches of the South, I think it's unfair for us not to discuss Massimo Coda, because he's been key for them in their recent victories. And this is a guy who, just looking at his Wikipedia page, he's had about 20 clubs in the last 13 years. Has he found home now at Benevento, or is he just going to be there for a year and move on? Do you think Benevento can stay up? Serious question.
I saw an interesting statistic when I was reading a match report in La Gazzetta dello Sport, and they said that at the moment, well, Benevento's 8 points from safety, mm-hmm. as opposed to Crotone this time, they were 9 points from safety. So mathematically, the possibility is there. In terms of form, I think with Roberto De Zerbi finally getting his ideas across. It looks like he's got the formation and the choice of personnel right, so that looks good. They're looking stronger in the wide positions. And the aforementioned Calder, well, he's been keen the last two games. Under Marco Baroni, he was either spraying his shots or they were getting saved. But this time, he scored two goals in three games. And, I mean, he scored three goals in two games, sorry. And he set up the third goal for Enrico Brignola, who looks like a very promising winger. So perhaps he's turned the corner and he might actually be a focal point. And the way things are going for Benevento, if they can keep it up, they could pull off another miracle too.
Yeah, this is... And if you look down at the bottom of Serie A out there, there are a lot of teams down there who could very easily not win for the rest of the season. I'm looking at Genoa, Sassuolo. Probably not Cagliari, but Crotone and Verona, you wouldn't be surprised if they went on miserable runs. So I think Benevento have every chance of staying up. And as you were right to point out, Crotone did it from a worse position last year. Vito, you know, I think we've made it. I did say this was going to be a short one. How long have we been doing this now? We're half an hour in, so yeah, we've gone further than what I was hoping we would get. So, guys, thanks for sticking with myself and Vito on our own. Vito, say your goodbyes and where people can find you and read you and do whatever they want.
Well, I just want to thank our loyal listeners for listening every week. It's always most appreciated. Hopefully more can jump on board. For those who want to follow my work and read my work, you can go on the Forza Italian Football website, follow my Facebook page at Vito Doria. Then, of course, there's my Twitter and Instagram accounts, and the handles for those is Vito C. Doria.
Excellent stuff, guys. Get your suggestions for the outro music in the comments as quickly as possible while I wrap this up, because I haven't got a clue what I'm going to use this week. But yeah, as Vito said, thank you so much for getting your comments in. We really do appreciate it. It does help us get through this thing. Yeah, guys, Vito, don't let me do this podcast if I've done another podcast in the day again, because it's a struggle to get through this. I can barely speak at the moment. My mouth is just so dry. Right, what was I saying? Okay, yeah, that'll do it. We will... Oh, it's the winter break. So we'll try to do something next week, but I don't know. Hopefully Nick sorts out his Wi-Fi situation. Yeah, okay, from myself, from Vito, that's all there is to say, and it's ciao for now.
Sta curva, qua pioggia e qua sole, ogni partita per noi è emozione. Questa bandiera con rosso rogore, e questo giallo che brilla e quell'ore. Tu sei l'amore, ce l'hai sta passione, e noi cantammo per te. Forza Benevento, corri più del vento. Ci va trovato tutto quanto abbracciato. Mi siamo figli e st'amore sincero. Solo con te mio toccamo sto cielo. Tu sei speranza e non grande di mano. Mai devo dimmi la sana. Forza bene.
Benevento.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.